Dr. Paul, welcome to our show, With the Wind, Science Revealed. You may remember us as Against the Wind, Doctors in Science Under Fire. We've shifted, folks. You know, we've been fighting, trying to present the information, share the knowledge, but now we're going to stand confident in our knowledge and power in all of you who watch. This force that we are is behind us, and we're going with that force, with the wind. Enjoy this show today. I've got Josh Getzgau back. He's talking about the COVID vaccine safety signals that the CDC ignored for almost a year and a half. You will start to comprehend the massive number of health issues caused by these COVID jabs. In fact, 770 different conditions that reach a signal of safety concern. Powerful. And then I have a very important interview with a good friend of mine, Dr. Cami Benton. She shares her personal story, her clinic, Compass Integrative Health. We talk about informed consent, treating COVID, vaccine injury, and this new model that's going to change how we access healthcare. New direct primary care model. She's going to talk about that. Enjoy the show. Dr. Paul, coming to you from the heart. It's a new year. And I want to thank all of you for being on this journey with us. You know, this started against the wind. And I think I started with that word because I was embattled. I'd had a couple decades of trying to understand why everything was going wrong in the world of child health, pediatrics, vaccines, and then came that emergency suspension of my license. It was like, what the heck? I felt like I was going running against the wind. Here's the beauty of something that is happening in our world, and I want to have you join this transition to With the Wind. I was at the coast recently running. Well, I don't run very well anymore. Let's say jogging. No, it wasn't even constant jogging. Jogging and walking. The wind was going at about 60 miles per hour with gusts beyond that. The sand was just blasting in front of me as I was running with the wind behind me. And let me tell you, running with the wind, I had my best mile time ever. There's something about embracing change and just going with it. So here's another change I want to just have us think about. We have been fighting. Here's this information. We go to our loved ones, we go to our friends, we go to people, our doctors, and we try to show them the evidence, the science, and we are battering our heads up against a wall. We don't have to do that anymore. We're going to pivot from fighting this to saying to anybody that is trying to tell you that vaccines are safe and effective, simply this. Prove it. Prove us wrong. We can be calm about this. We don't have to fight back. We're running with the wind. We have what we know, and there's nothing more to say. So let's be calm and courageous, brave and compassionate, humble and fearless. Prove us wrong. Well, welcome, Josh Getzgau. It is such a privilege to have you back on With the Wind, The Science Revealed, formerly Against the Wind, Doctors in Science Under Fire. Folks, today, what Josh is going to present is exactly why I am changing the title of this show. After you see this information, there is no question. It's no longer about us needing to prove to anybody else that these vaccines are a problem. The data's out. He's going to share it. It's now up to anybody else who thinks that vaccines are safe. Prove it to us. Prove us that we are wrong, that these shots are actually safe. So that's why we're now with the wind. Welcome to the show.
All right. I love it. With the wind.
With the wind. So you are, just for people who may not know you, you have a background in criminology, you teach in Israel, you have extensive research in science, in medicine, in epidemiology, and you're not an epidemiologist, but you understand science. This is in your wheelhouse and part of your background training. You have an incredible Substack for people who want to really go and dive into to see your writing, and everything you're going to present is available at Jack and Apes. That's the name of
That's right. Jackandapes.substack.com. That's right.
Yep. So anything you want to go see for yourself, please check that out. Let's start briefly with the fact that
You wrote about the FOIA contracts showing the CDC actually expected up to 1,000 times reports of adverse events.
Well, okay. So this was back in August 2020. Somebody got FOIA'd the contracts with General Dynamics, which is a weapons company, which the CDC hired to do the VAERS data and processing for COVID-19 vaccines. They usually get 1,000 reports a week. They were expecting 1,000 reports every day for COVID-19 vaccines. And this was back in August of 2020, months before the vaccine was even given the emergency use authorization. Not only that, they usually get about 5% of the reports are serious adverse events. They were expecting 40% of the reports to be serious adverse events. They contracted General Dynamics for $10 million for 1 year to do this. By March, by end of February, they realized that they had totally underestimated and they tripled the amount of money that they were paying to General Dynamics to take care of the huge backlog that had been created just by the end of February.
I don't know if you caught that. The CDC, the Center for Disease Control, who we thought was there to protect us, the public, and to help with the wellness and health of our population, actually already knew prior to this vaccine even being injected into a single arm that there was going to be a disaster of side effects. So now we can go into this next issue where you really blow this out of the water. I know you were involved in the research and the analysis of the CDC's own COVID vaccine safety signals back from July of 2022. You helped in this analysis. This was published in Epoch Times. And again, it's on your Substack.
Right.
Tell us about that.
Okay, so just a quick background, right? So maybe regular viewers will remember, I did a safety signal analysis using the CDC's methodology in 2021. Then we FOIA'd the CDC asking them, where is the safety signal analysis that you promised to do? And they came back and said, we didn't do it. And then Zach Stieber at Epoch Times got on the story and he said, what do you mean you didn't do it? What do you have? And they went back and forth. Eventually, what they said was, okay, we did do it. We started it at the end of March 2022, 15 months after the rollout of the vaccines, until late July 2022. And when he asked to see what the results were, they said, well, we're not going to share them with you. But they were basically similar to the safety signal analysis that the FDA had been doing. They said we didn't find any new unexpected adverse events. Then he turned to the FDA and said, can we have yours? And they said, no, we're not going to share with you. So he FOIA'd the CDC for their safety signal analysis. And that's what we're talking about. I had no role in the analysis. This is all straight from the CDC. I just took it and kind of tried to make sense of it.
Okay. I just have to highlight one thing you said that just is mind-boggling. Again, as to why we can no longer, should never, ever, ever trust the CDC again. They said that this data that Josh is about to present to you revealed no unexpected safety signals.
Yes.
Wow. So, I mean, the safety signal is so powerful, as you're about to show us. So jump into that.
All right. So basically, I'm going to share. So what you're going to about to see here is an Excel file. This is straight from the CDC. Okay. This is what their spreadsheet looks like. And on this column here, you have the first column, you have all of the different adverse events. And then the yellow column, that's the safety signal. Okay. And this is a measure called the PRR, the proportional reporting ratio, okay? And this is very simple, the way this is calculated, okay? You simply take the percent of, you take an adverse event report, a type of adverse event for that's reported for COVID vaccines, okay? Say myocardial infarction. You say, what percent of all the adverse event reports for COVID vaccines or myocardial infarction? And then you compare that to previous vaccines that are considered safe, okay? You say, well, what percent of those reports for those other vaccines were for myocardial infarction, okay? And then you create a ratio of those two percentages. So, and you'd have this proportional reporting ratio, okay?
So if I understand this correctly, you're looking at all other vaccines combined, how much myocarditis they were reporting against just this COVID jab. And if the ratio was one, in other words, they were equal, we would see a number of one.
That's exactly right. If they're equal, that's one, there's no safety signal. They want a right. safety signal that's at least two, okay? And that's statistically significant, meaning basically what it means is that there's enough reports that it becomes statistically significant. And those are the basic, the two most important criteria, okay?
Awesome. So we go back to your chart. We see safety signals in the 100.
So what's the summary? What's kind of, okay, so what you said, all other vaccines. So basically they're comparing reports. This is only the mRNA COVID vaccines. They're comparing it to the reports for all other non-COVID vaccines since 2009. And I'm mainly focusing here on the analysis they did of the 18 plus, okay? People are 18 years and older, later we'll talk about teenagers and kids, okay? So they're comparing the reports for adults to reports for adults, okay? And they found 770 safety signals, statistically significant safety signals. According to their own protocol, they should be going through and looking at each one of these. They have other data and other methods to follow this up, right? This is what VAERS is for. It's to alert them to safety signals. This is the early warning system that they always tell us is so amazing. They bragged about it to the government officials prior to the rollout of vaccines. We have this early warning system, but they waited 15 months to use it. Okay. Now, 2/3 of all of the safety signals that they found have a safety signal that is larger in size than the signal for myocarditis. So over 500 of these safety signals are blaring louder than myocarditis, which is something that they have admitted is the risk is increased after the vaccines. It is caused by the vaccine. So at minimum, they should be looking at all of the safety signals that are larger than that. Right.
Josh, I have to point something out. In medicine, we have this thing where when there are you come as a patient with a symptom, sometimes it's a diagnosis, it's a condition, you had a heart attack, or maybe it was just chest pain or whatever the symptom may be. And as a doctor, we have to figure out what caused it. You know, first of all, can you figure out what caused it? Then you figure out what to do about it. There, you've just pointed out there are over 500 safety signals. Those are conditions or symptoms that it is clear, so statistically significant, that the vaccine is likely the cause. Now, obviously, you don't prove causation with one report, but this level of significance is so powerful. Pretty much, folks, if you have anything happening to you medically, your first thought should be, did I get the jab? And if I did, that's number one suspect. You have to start thinking about it. And when I read reports, I don't see any mention of vaccine status, which is a complete sham if you're going to publish research today and not mention the vaccine status as relates to COVID.
Absolutely. And, you know, the onus is on them to show that the vaccine doesn't cause it, right? The way that they approach this is that the safety signal is meaningless until we can prove otherwise. And then they don't bother trying to actually prove or examine it one way or another. But you know, the precautionary principles tells us, no, we need to assume that this is causal.
Yep.
Right.
And that's why I say, prove us wrong
one by one and prove that it isn't if we want.
Yeah. Prove us wrong. You're about to present now. Just blast through the data. These are some of the safety signals.
Let's go through this quickly. And then I want to talk about, you know, because people who talk are going to show this to their friends and they're going to say, well, and then the friends are going to come up and they're going to tell them why VAERS is problematic. And there's important things that they need to know and to be able to respond to that type of criticism. Okay, so let's just look at I'm taking all of the safety signals, just the safety signals, all of the adverse events, and I've categorized them. Okay, I did this on my own. It might not be perfect. I found something that I could have, you know, but basically you have, and then all of those safety signals for all of these different categories, how many adverse events in total were reported. So we see the largest number of reports for cardiovascular, mainly cardiac related.
70,000.
Yes. And these are just the safety signals. This is not like everything that's in VAERS, okay? Then there's neurological, thromboembolic, which basically is blood clotting, right? pulmonary, that's your chest lung related, menstrual problems, death. There's a huge safety signal for death, hemorrhaging, gastrointestinal problems, hematological problems, immunological. I think I have something here. I don't know, something on my slide that shouldn't be there, but okay, it doesn't matter. And all the way down to cancer. Okay, you got hematological, immunological cancer. Now let's look at some of these categories. What do some of these categories include? Let's look at cardiovascular. So the number one thing in cardiovascular is atrial fibrillation, which is a huge risk, a huge problem, because you can have like clotted blood that builds up in one of the parts of your heart, and then is suddenly released and creates a deadly blood clot. There are other reasons why atrial fibrillation is a bad thing, right? It's not just that, but, irregular heartbeats, myocarditis, cardiac failure, cardiac arrest, on and on. Ventricular extrasystoles is basically a premature contraction of the heart, which can be okay, but depending on the frequency and if it goes along with other cardiac problems, is a huge risk for sudden cardiac arrest. Okay.
Yeah. I have to just point out to the listener, you have this magnitude of heart issues. Many of these can be fatal. Do you have any wonder what's causing all these top athletes to just simply drop dead, or at least some of them are near death and get resuscitated? And we hope, you know, for those who get resuscitated, that they'll have a good outcome. But here's the proof of what's the cause.
By the way, there was a safety signal for resuscitation in the data. Like they were like over 1,000 reports of people who had died have been resuscitated.
Yeah.
Okay. Blood clotting, thromboembolic. So you got your generic thrombosis, cerebrovascular accident, which is another word for a stroke caused by a blood clot, basically pulmonary embolisms, which are deadly, right? Myocardial infarctions, when you have a blood clot to the artery of your arteries feeding blood to your heart. Also deadly. All of these are basically pretty much deadly. Transient ischemic attack is another kind of mini stroke that you have. This is maybe not deadly, but next time maybe it would be, right? And
So folks, this is this whole, some people call it the clot shot. There is something going on. We presented it in last week's show that shows that the coagulation, the accumulation of the red blood cells into massive clots is triggered by spike protein. And yes, we're seeing it. You're showing the data.
And then here we've got neurological problems. We've got tinnitus, which a lot of people complain about. Even there was a letter that a federal employee wrote to the CDC saying, I've got it, tinnitus. We're in a group. We've got all this evidence. We need to go for it. And the head of the CDC VAERS program, John Sue, this is from a FOIA email. He instructs the employee, says, tell him thank you and cut him off. Cut him off, right? A federal employee. It's just shocking the disregard that these bureaucrats have for people's health and well-being. And then, we go down the list. Paresthesias, the two big ones that triggered a safety signal are oral paresthesias. These are like tingling, or you get like needle poking sensation. This is the one that when you ask the vaccine injured if they could take one thing off of their symptom list, paresthesia is the top. Okay. Bell's palsy, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. So then we go, let's go down. Then we've got menstrual issues, all different kinds of menstrual issues. We know about this. This is finally, after like a year and a half, they finally admitted that, yes, this is caused by the vaccine, but it's very limited, very short-lived, which is not true. We know that already, right? And then we've got the hemorrhaging. You've got all these hemorrhaging. So you've got blood clots on one hand, you've got hemorrhaging on the other. It's just causing all kinds of problems. And then you've got the gastrointestinal. Colitis is number one. This is like a really bad problem with your intestines. Appendicitis is number two, and that's
that was shocking to see that. I had no idea there would be a link, but it makes sense. And itis is inflammation, and this is really causing a lot of inflammation.
And some of it is combined in, like, for the younger ages, they're like perforated appendix, appendectomies are also safety signals. So these are very serious cases. And in fact, there was a study done on Israeli electronic medical records data, which is problematic in many respects. But one of the things that they actually found was risk increase after the vaccine was appendicitis. So here we have, in addition to myocarditis, in addition to menstrual problems, we have this other validation that these safety signals are not just flukes. It's not just people putting in fraudulent reports or whatever. These are genuine, you know, signals that really need to be taken serious.
Yeah. And I know you've got just very briefly some data on children, but
here's our 12 to 72 years. Now here, we don't have thousands of safety signals. We have 96, which in addition to myocarditis and pericarditis that we would expect, we have some bad ones like Bell's palsy, genital ulcerations, cardiac valve incompetencies, which is basically another term for heart failure, pulmonary embolisms. Oh, there we see it again, appendicitis, right? So, I'm not going to go through all of these. You can see them on the screen.
And even 5 to 11 year olds, I think you had 66.
Yes. So now here we have 66 safety signals, including many of these other ones. Now, the other thing to remember about a safety signal is that if a certain adverse event had never been reported for other vaccines, okay, it will never show up as a safety signal, even if you had thousands or tens of thousands of reports for the new vaccine, for the COVID vaccine. So one reason, and this is something I need to look into more, one reason we might be seeing fewer safety signals for these age groups is because there's a bunch of things that do show up, but they don't count as safety signals because they never showed up with older vaccines.
Yeah. Who's heard of a five to nine year, having a heart attack, for example.
Right. Or cardiac valve. How many other vaccines would you associate with a cardiac valve incompetency for 5 to 11 year olds?
Right.
Or menstrual irregularities for 5 to 11 year olds? Are you serious?
Yeah. Right? Which is why we really, going forward, we should be always looking at all health outcomes, without a doubt.
Oh yeah,
all
absolutely.
Health outcomes.
So let me just say something.
Josh, go ahead and
okay.
Sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead and talk about the complaints or the pushback we're going to get.
So basically, the pushback on VAERS is essentially like either the reports are unreliable, they're fraudulent, or there are so many, they're artificially inflated because people are worried because of anti-vaxxers, because people didn't know about VAERS, all of these kinds of things. So first of all, if they were unreliable, then why is it that the CDC has published papers using VAERS data in the top medical journals, right? You don't do that with unreliable data. Moreover, when they published their paper on myocarditis reports, they found that 80% of them were reliable and full enough to or complete enough to include in their paper. So are we supposed to believe that the myocarditis reports are reliable? And by the way, they said they're underreported, not overreported. People weren't exaggerating the reports for myocarditis or increasing them, which you might expect because people are worried about, you know, they've heard about myocarditis. No. So it's if these were not reliable enough, are we supposed to believe that only the myocarditis reports are reliable and none of the other ones are? It doesn't make sense. As far as this increase, this artificial inflation of reports, well, first of all, the safety signal analysis doesn't really rely on the number of reports. It relies on the proportion of reports for a particular adverse event out of all reports for adverse events. And in fact, if you have an inflation of reporting, it would tend to minimize the safety signals, not inflate them. So that's the first thing. But the second thing is, if you look at what they're comparing COVID vaccines to all other vaccines that have been given since 2009. I did a little back of the envelope calculation. There were at least twice as many other vaccines, mainly flu vaccines, given to adults since 2009. So if you're talking that it's a numbers game, you're going to lose that argument because the other vaccines are far more in number than the COVID vaccine. So,
And despite that,
there are other arguments. People can go to my website and look. I go through these very carefully, but those are kind of the key ones.
Yeah, thank you for that. I mean, we know the Harvard Pilgrim study found that the VAERS data was underreported by 100 times.
Right.
And this may not be that magnitude, but it's up there.
Oh, yeah. I believe for many adverse events, it is at least that.
I just want to, as we wrap this up, Josh, you teach criminology. It feels to me like something criminal is going on, but what's your take? What does this mean for us going forward?
Well, I completely agree with what you said. We simply cannot trust these captured regulatory agencies, right? The CDC, the FDA, whatever country you're in, the corollary is to those organizations, you just can't trust them. Look, crime is, regardless of what the law says, crime is using force or fraud for gain, right? To gain. And that's what I see basically everywhere I look, is these companies are using fraud mainly to enrich themselves. And it's criminal. Even if the law says what they're doing is okay, it's criminal.
Yeah. Yeah. And for folks who don't know, this has been going on for a long time, since the 1986 Child Act, Immunization Act, that removed liability from pharmaceutical companies. And then the PrEP Act kind of extended this to the COVID era and adult vaccines. And getting vaccines on the childhood schedule makes them automatically immune from any kind of liability.
Yeah. Yeah. They had already gotten immunity for the emergency use thing. Yeah. Going into the problem is, I mean, where we're at now is that they're doing this because they want to introduce the mRNA platform as a vaccine platform going forward. So they're developing tons of vaccines based on this. Gene therapy is really what it is. Yeah. And so they're not going to give up the ghost on that. They're not going to, once they admit that these vaccines are dangerous, that's it for this mRNA platform. And I think that's just too important for them for whatever reasons.
Yet for us in the world, it is more important that we shut this down than anything.
Absolutely.
There's never been a bigger threat to our health.
This is horrendous.
It's really absolutely horrendous. So your parting advice for our viewers?
My parting advice, I think that it's very easy to feel disempowered. You look around the world and you see all of these institutions that are so powerful that all seemed aligned and arrayed against us. It's very easy. And so the advice I have is, take control of your own life, right? Get off the pharma wheel of, illness and take care of your own health. Take control of your own health. That kind of personal empowerment is something that you can do, right? It's within all of our own abilities to take control of our own lives. And if we all did that and we got out of the pharma kind of, industrial complex, where we're not taking medications, right? We're staying healthy. It would, deal a huge blow to their interests and to their power over us. So it's,
personal responsibility. If you're a parent, that includes taking back your child's health.
Yes.
Nobody else makes decisions for you or your child. Right. You can get off the hamster wheel, as you put it, of pharma, and stop jabbing yourself with anything.
And try to get off the medication. Try to be healthy. Try to live out. It's not easy, but it's doable. Everybody can do it.
Absolutely. This is lifestyle stuff, folks. It's minimizing your toxic exposure, getting real food, organic if possible, and avoiding pharma, avoiding toxins. Get your rest, get your exercise, surround yourself with love and supportive people, and turn off the media, except for what Josh is doing on his Substack and With the Wind Now, folks. Thank you for joining us. Josh, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Welcome, Cami Benton. What a privilege it is to have you on Against the Wind.
So nice to see you again after so many years of getting to know you and your cause. And I am honored to be on here today.
Yeah, we go back a ways. We were both founding board members of Physicians for Informed Consent. And I remember all the fun we had during all those board meetings. For people who don't know this woman, she is incredible. MD, who is board certified in family medicine and functional medicine. You have a membership practice, Benton Integrative Medicine, which we'll certainly talk more about. And some things I didn't know. You are the president of a nonprofit, Compass Integrative Health. We're going to learn more about that. Medical advisor for Sovereign, is it Hive? Sovereign Hive?
Hive, like a beehive.
Okay, this is an innovative way of using cryptocurrency for healthcare. I want to know more about that too. And you're the medical Crowd Health Bitcoin Medical Advisory Board, your whole baby advisory board. I mean, my goodness, where do you find the time to do all this?
Well, some of those are kind of new, so we shall see. I can keep up.
So I think for our viewers, take us back a little bit through your journey in medicine, because I'm always intrigued when MDs like you and I end up in this space, right, where we're really embracing integrative and functional and other approaches. What was your journey to come to this place?
Well, I did not grow up at all in a medical family or anything holistic. We grew up on Coca-Cola. Me and my parents smoked and, you know, in the car, everything like old school. And so I didn't really have much in the way of ideas about medicine. And then I decided on medicine last minute, knowing that I probably really was meant to do this. I grew up like reading books on kids with scoliosis and kids with cancer. And my mom called me morbid, but you know, I also was a very country girl and we didn't go to college in my family. So I was the first one to go to college. And wow. So when I went, you know, of course you go in with this idea of the beauty of medicine and what it stands for and the honor of it. It's like, it's really neat. And then you get there and you're like, wow, this is kind of toxic. But you just suck it up and you go through. And then even in residency, I was like, that's when I started really noticing the gaslighting that would occur, where the patient would come in clearly, like I remember a lady, she had the yeast on her tongue, she had the thrush, she had fungus in her armpits and her groin and recurring yeast infections. And she's like, I've got systemic candida. I tell my attending, he's like, oh, she's read too much Dr. Google. It doesn't exist. And, you know, it's only if you have cancer or HIV that you would actually have chronic candida. I went back to her covered in fungus and yeast. I'm like, they don't know how to treat it. Right. So it's just, that was just the very beginning of some of the, they're crazy if they don't fit into our narrative or what we've already learned kind of thing. Yeah. I just remember driving down like my very first year of practice. I'm like, I am literally just doling out pills and I feel like I'm never getting anyone better. But it was an overwhelming thought when I met an homeopath and I'm like, there's this whole other field of medicine out there I didn't even know about. And I was just a little envy, a little FOMO, like I'm not getting anyone better, but he's getting people better. Why is like, where did I go wrong here? I want to learn what he learns, you know, mm-hmm. But it's like, still they have you working so many hours. Like right. I was working 50, 55 hours a week with babies at home trying to survive. Like how am I supposed to study a whole other field of medicine? And that's when I discovered functional medicine. Functional medicine came at the right time because my kids all had various vaccine reactions. My oldest one had neurologic reactions. The middle one had autoimmune and the third one had mitochondrial dysfunction. And she stopped talking and walking from an illness, but I had already kind of started figuring things out with her. Mm-hmm. And I just remember my oldest one, I was praying. It's like, she'd had a lot of reactions when she was a baby. And then by the time she was five, I was like, I think it might be the vaccines. But at that time I was very alone. I didn't know people that were questioning vaccines enough for me to even have any kind of community. And so I just remember praying to God. I was like, God, please let the reactions not be so big that I cannot handle.
I'd like you to define for our viewers the term homeopathy and the term functional medicine, because I think so many people have children, let's just say right now we're talking about kids, but even adults with, I'll call them vaccine effects. Sometimes I used to use the term vaccine injury, but that might be a little harsh and people can't quite go there. But vaccines can have effects, you know, whether the motor tics you saw or the sensory issues or whatever they may be. There is this beautiful thing that you've already talked about, which is you can often heal, right? You can recover from the effects of, and the two modalities you've mentioned already that I just want you to define for people so they understand them is homeopathy and functional medicine.
Absolutely. So even beyond that, there's a bigger term. It's like an umbrella term, integrative medicine. And it's like the umbrella has these spokes, and within these spokes, there's functional medicine, homeopathy, acupuncture, energy medicine, frequency medicine. It goes on and on. The field is huge. And so homeopathy is a specific form of medicine that was created in Germany over 200 years ago. And it is really more of an energy type of medicine, quite frankly. And this is why so many people believe it's a placebo, that it's like not, it's impossible for it to work. But once you understand energy medicine, then you can understand, oh, this is how it works. So it's basically, they take a poison even, or a toxin or a whatever scary thing, and that creates symptoms, and then they dilute it. So like when you go to Whole Foods or Earth Fair, one of those chains, they have the little blue little tubes that has like these little sugar pellets in it. And on there, it'll say like 30C. That means one drop of that toxin or that poison is diluted 30 times. And the higher the number, the more diluted it is, but the more potent it is. It's totally backwards. It makes no sense. Like it feels crazy, but it is very powerful. It cured my second child of her incurable autoimmune disease. But, wow. You know, that the pediatrician said, oh, it was a classic case of dermatomyositis. And then 6 months later, when she was better, she's like, oh, I must've been mistaken, you know, and it was a fabulous journey. That was his own fabulous journey. And then functional medicine is really root cause medicine. It's still very allopathic based. Allopathic means against the disease. That's really the whole field of medicine is allopathic medicine versus homeopathic medicine, which means like the disease. So in homeopathy, like cures like. So for instance, my fiance who gets poison ivy super easy, he can look at it and get it. He used to have to go on steroids and have all these, this whole routine around it. Now he just takes Roustox, which is from poison ivy. He takes a little bit and then he's like done with it. And wow. So it's pretty amazing. Allopathic medicine is like antipyretics, antibiotics, anti-inflammatory. It's against the disease. There's a time and a place for it. Thank God for like so many advances in medicine, which is great, but functional medicine is still pretty much based a lot in that. Like we still do herbal antibiotics and we still do the antibiotics, anti-inflammatories like curcumin, but it's a little bit still more supportive and has fewer side effects. It doesn't mean no side effects. I mean, herbals can have side effects as well. And so the goal is to look at the whole body as a system that's connected. You're not just a heart or a liver or a brain. You're really all connected. And you learn back to embryology of how like your skin is connected to your gut. And when you understand those concepts, it helps you in the treatment of trying to kind of go backwards to rebuild Humpty Dumpty to put him back together again. And that's kind of functional medicine. Yeah. And so, I mean, there's just all forms, but those are the two big ones that I really use to support my kids. And my oldest one also did functional neurology. It's actually created by mostly chiropractic physicians have the functional neurology training. Not all. The functional neurology is especially within chiropractic, usually training, but not all chiropractors do it. And not all of them do it well. It's a newer field, and it's amazing the kind of how they can connect the vision, the auditory, the sensory, the cerebellar, and the higher functioning of the brain to put it together. And it just starts to make things work. So my child, she started that in fifth grade, and she went from having panic attacks, struggling, needing tutors. We were paying $200 a month for tutoring, and it was a fight. It was tears all the time, like the whole time. It was so stressful. And then all of a sudden, within 3 months, reading voluntarily, straight A student, no more tutoring, no more panic attacks. Now she can still do the funny human trick of like relaxing her eyes and her right eye goes out. So she was trained in like do it back in, but that she does that kind of as a funny trick.
That's so fascinating.
It's a humor about it.
That is fascinating. Well, thank you for that amazing description. When I stumbled on functional medicine, I'll call it, or integrative medicine, where you start incorporating everything that works, it was like medicine became fun again. right? Because when we were trapped in the allopathic, which is what most people would call mainstream, you know, diagnose and treat. There's a symptom, here's a drug. It felt like I wasn't getting my patients better, especially all the chronic things we're starting to see. And you've got amazing examples just within your own family. So I want to learn more about Compass Integrative Health, because this is, I believe, your integrative medical center, where obviously you have allopathic training, which is your pharma doc training, but you're really incorporating love and holistic medicine. And tell us more about that, because I think you are probably going to be an inspiration for a lot of people who are waking up to the fact we got to do better.
Right. Well, the good news is I believe that this is actually happening across the country already. And so I think the last 2 years, last three years now, has really served the purpose of waking a lot of us up that were not already awakened to the sheer control of corporate elites. And now this is, and we're just in the slice of the medical pie. Like you can go across the whole spectrum in government and global tyranny, quite frankly, but you know, we're in the medical field. So I think that people are able to see the loss of connection between other humans during this time. And they were isolated, shamed, like fear, and out of that grew hatred and division. And so it was about a year ago in August that I had been seeing across the news, doctors wanting to deny care, medical care to the unvaccinated, and people who are questioning things and watching people being shamed, watching the censorship occur. And I was like, how can this really be? And I would see in physician chat rooms, this wishing of death upon the unvaccinated and no, they can't get their organ transplants unless they get this experimental vaccine. You're like, really, this is nuts. And then I had an actual schoolmate of mine from medical school openly challenged me on Facebook, wishing death on the unvaccinated, said they don't deserve medical care. And when I asked her, I was like, well, in our Hippocratic Oath, we're trained to treat prisoners and criminals and child molesters, everyone. You know, we don't have to like what they do, but it's our responsibility as physicians to take care of people with as little judgment as is humanly possible. And she says, if they don't trust me to get this vaccine, then they don't deserve my care. And they could just like choose to make their choices at home and die at home if they need to.
That reminds me of really what's been happening in pediatrics for me in my community. If most pediatricians, like all but one or two in the community of over 100 here in Portland, Oregon, if you won't follow the CDC schedule, you're discharged. There's the door. And it's like, yeah, what happened to our oath to take care of all patients and honor their informed consent? It's like crazy.
And that's sort of why I opened up my own practice. The direct primary care practice was to get out of that system as well. And to provide a safe place for my own kids, because we couldn't go either. My own kids couldn't be seen by their pediatrician anymore because I had to stop vaccinating them because they had all the vaccine reactions that they refused to even put on the chart. They didn't put on the chart. It was never reported to VAERS. I honestly, as a physician giving vaccines, I'd never even heard of VAERS. Until after all my children had their vaccine reactions. And, I know what you mean there. It's like this militant, and that started, I saw that shift in 2015, where suddenly, you know, they were tolerated to now they were like demonized as a whole. So this was happening during COVID. And so there's a lot of good things that happened out of COVID in my mind is that it forced people into really deciding what was really important to them in life. And of course, there's different ways of viewing it on all sides. And I know that people just did the best they knew how to do during that time. But when it comes to the people wishing death upon other people, that is not doing the best you can do. So then we're like, okay, how can we change this hate and put it into love? And that was to be part of our, let's create the new medical system. Let's be part of that. Let's be creative and let's step outside the system. I can't beat the system. I've been spending years trying to fight the system. It doesn't work. Like they are, and there's enough people who want that. So what's my place to tear down the system that people want? There's a lot of people who want that pill for an ill. They want the quick fix and they are okay with staying sick their whole lives and seeing their doctor every 3 months. They're fine with it. Mm-hmm. And so let's create the new system. And as we create the new system built in love, respect, compassion, informed consent, then, and we can start collecting data to show how much it works. And then all of a sudden the big corporation will be like, wait a second, what are they doing over there? They're stealing our shares. How can we compete? Quite frankly, it's a win-win situation. Either they join us and then we force the creation of the whole new medical system, or we continue to separate. And as they crumble themselves, will be that escape route for many people. So however it turns out, you know, and so we're like, let's create the system. And now I grew up really poor. And so I wanted to also create a system that everyone can afford, and or at least we can figure out how to like get people care. And so we have a nonprofit arm. We have the for-profit arm that's necessary to create the funding. And, you know, because not everyone wants to donate all their money to raise $22 million. So we have the nonprofit arm that will serve the people that are in need, communities that are at higher risk, like domestic violence and poorer communities. People with less access to care, and then the regular system. And now we clearly cannot take Medicare or Medicaid because, well, then we have to follow rules that we don't necessarily believe in. And the part of this is the freedom, the medical freedom. Yeah. So we're
how about the other health plans, though? I found similar challenges as a pediatrician. Not all, but some health plans ended up dropping me because my vaccine rate was low. Therefore, I had poor quality.
Well, this is where we're researching into other more creative options. Like there's like Crowd Health. It's a MediShare. It's a newer MediShare. That's a monthly mm-hmm. kind of thing where you put in your money and then they use your money with permission to help someone else with their knee surgery. But when you have your need, then they crowdsource the money and then they send you the money. And it's based upon similar programs like Samaritan's Ministries that they have, mm-hmm. the Christian MediShares, they have Catholic MediShares, they have all these different MediShares, but this is like not a religious one. And so now I feel like we have options for all kinds of people to put into a co-op type of insurance. But it's really more of a MediShare. And what is nice about it is that it gets us back to the idea that primary care should just be affordable primary care. And then we should have backup and help for more disastrous kind of things, right? And yes. So like you yep. need an emergency surgery, you got a car accident. So, and within those systems, like they are actually like the Crowd Health, they're trying to use Bitcoin as with the cryptocurrency as a method of paying for services and exchange of services.
Is that up and running?
That is up and the Crowd Health is up and running. I just joined in on their medical board advisory committee to figure out how they're using the Bitcoin, because we want to be able to utilize that for my practice, which is a membership practice. We use no insurance. All that's good that's come out of COVID, including these new medical systems that we're hoping to start off with an integrative urgent care is going to be probably our first project that we're going to have.
So is that you talking now? We're going to go to back to Compass Integrative Health.
Yes.
You're building or acquiring a brick and mortar place where people can go for urgent care.
Right. Because there are a lot of urgent cares were shut down during the pandemic and there's waiting lists. You can't even get in to see a local one for like 2 days. You have to make appointments now for urgent cares. And so there's obviously a demand for it, but then what we want to do is create a place. Let's say you break your arm. Well, you still need a cast, you know, you still need to see orthopedists, but now we already know that you can do some homeopathy that helps does healing. Comfrey compresses can heal broken bones. You can do PEMF, which helps to stimulate bone growth. And there's different forms of PEMF. So it'd be nice to be able to have like those modalities there so that way people can do the combination of everything. Or let's say, you know, the poison ivy, like, okay, well, here's your prescription for the steroids if you really want, or you can do this little homeopathic for like $10 that has no significant side effects that you can actually take and get better faster. So just being able to provide people options, and that way people still want their antibiotic. Okay, here's your antibiotic that you might not really need. Or you can actually learn how to do this and never need to see us again. So our goals would be that philosophy of teaching people, even in an urgent care setting, how to take care of themselves and creating sort of the mini a mini hospital, but more urgent care level first. And then we'd like to create a 23 hour observation unit next. And ultimately, we'd love to have the inpatient units. So that way, when people are really sick, then we can have like really creative buildings that we can, for instance, raise, have like the a wall that you can raise out and push them outside into the sun and get fresh air when they're really sick. Wouldn't that be great?
Conveyor belt to the sunshine.
Right. And then have like people's families that can sit there in the sunshine with a garden around them to actually have a healing atmosphere. And so these can be healing centers because healthcare in this country is really sick care. So how can we create a true healing care system? And so that's going to take into account connection, human connection. I never want anyone to ever die alone again. Like can help.
That was one of the biggest tragedies of COVID. This immediately you suck your sick person, or sometimes they weren't even that sick, but because they had COVID, go to isolation. Now they have no one by their side and often dying alone. It's horrendous.
Or babies being taken from their mothers. Every element of this feels like I'm in a bizarre sci-fi movie that you're like, we're like in different universes from that world. And so we basically killed people. I fully believe that the over a million people that died, the vast majority were due to lack of early treatment, and the rest, we killed them all with remdesivir.
Yeah. And intubation and what have you.
And isolation, fear. Yeah. We know the placebo effect. People have to understand the placebo effect is when you take something you think is going to work and you believe it and it works. And it's just a sugar pill. The same thing happens if you think something's going to kill you. I mean, if you believe something's going to kill you, you're more likely to die than if you believe you're going to be saved. And so when we've convinced, I mean, I had healthy people like terrified they're going to die. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they end up just having cold symptoms. And they're like, oh, I survived. I'm like, the risk of you surviving is like over 99.5%, depending on your age range. It was not even as high as 0.5% mortality. It was like as low, like I said, as low as 0.00 whatever percent, you know, in relatively young people, that they were not going to die from this.
No, absolutely not. So help our viewers. So a lot of viewers, thank you for tuning in. You're aware of some of these problems we're discussing, but we're hoping to reach people who are relatively new to this whole area of, you know, how do I find a good doctor? I'm getting suspicious that my doctor is sort of all the pharma. You know, they're pushing these shots. I don't feel comfortable with these shots anymore. I would think if I was in North Carolina, I'd be looking up, you know, Benton Integrative or Compass Integrative Health. But how do people learn about these amazing other options?
Well, I think going to independent practices that are not associated with bigger corporations is probably your first step, or looking for a direct primary care. Now, that doesn't mean, I know plenty of direct primary care doctors that were joined the other side and were pretty militant, you know, so that doesn't necessarily guarantee anything, but I would just call and ask, hey, what are your policies on masks, like in your office? What are your policies on the vaccine and being there in person? Because there's still doctors around here who won't see you if you've not been fully vaccinated. You can't go into the office in person. And so that gives you some idea. But I would definitely start with independent practices. And if you can find holistic MD or DOs or nurse practitioners, there's in the state below us, nurse practitioners can see people independently. So that's always a consideration. You know, so Compass is not seeing patients yet because we still got to raise the money. By the way, we are taking donations. The CompassIntegrativeHealth.com for the nonprofit has a tax deduction option, especially for the end of the year. Like, feel free to donate because we're needing that for the illegal help. If you want to donate, help support the cause.
Yeah. Will there be a virtual visit option with Compass?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's inevitable.
So I imagine as a family practice, your Benton Integrative Medicine, you must have had patients who just on their own went and got the COVID jab.
Yes.
What rough guess, what percentage of your practice did that?
About 5%, maybe.
Okay.
A very small percentage.
Yeah, that was my experience as well. I, being an integrative pediatrics, which I've now closed, but patients chose to come to me, and I know they do the same for you, because we are all about, they're in charge, informed consent, patients make the decision. We are partners in your healthcare, and our peers are more like my way or the highway. And if that's the kind of doctor you have, I would urge you to start looking around for a Cami Benton, a Benton Integrative Medicine. I might have to fly to Carolinas to see you.
I just would like to get people to get out of that place of fear and make it based upon actual science and truth. And then you decide, hey, yes, I believe that the risks, you know, this vaccine, this experimental vaccine outweigh, you know, or outweigh the benefits, or the benefits outweigh the risks. And I'm going to get it because I know, yes, I know there's a 23% risk of all-cause mortality, death among the vaccinated versus the unvaccinated, but I don't want to die from COVID. It might not make sense, whatever they decide. But as long as they have the data, then I want to provide that data for people. So then they have the right to choose. And then I can also be there to help them as they have adverse reactions, to try to help heal them, and with homeopathy and functional medicine and just mitochondrial support. And if you're going to get the vaccine, hey, here's a pre and post kind of program that we do to help support your immune system and your body and your mitochondria. So that way you can tolerate it better. If you really like, I had some people who like, I'm the sole provider for my entire family. And if I don't get the vaccine, I cannot provide food for my family. And to me, that's so tragic to have to choose between your feeding your family or taking an experimental treatment. I mean, we so violated the Nuremberg Code in right. all of this.
Well, and you and I are looking at the actual science, know that that's the riskier decision. Actually, if you want to be around to take care of your family, don't get the jab, because the risks of harm from the jab far outweigh the risk of harm from the infection.
Yeah, I think I read that it's like you have to seriously harm over 250 people to prevent one COVID hospitalization. You're like,
yeah, it doesn't add up.
It doesn't add up. And I'm taking care of people who have like had serious neurologic injuries, like the polyneuropathy. So basically there's a man who came in and his whole nerve, his skin hurt, his own fire, and his feet, and the poor guy's testicles were bright red from the autonomic dysregulation that he developed afterwards. And he went from working as a 50 something year old to disabled within like 2 months after his vaccine. I believe truly that love will always win over hate ultimately. And right now the darkness feels so big, and they are very powerful. But what's even more powerful is love. Like if you put them, they were equal, love's going to always tip the scale. And that's what we're heading for, is that critical mass and of this awakening. And I have gratitude to some extent for the horrors that have happened, because it's helped people move out of their comfort zones. Because when you're comfortable, you're not going to move. So this has forced you to really stand up for what you believe in. And it's not about me, Paul. It's not about you. It's about our children at this point. It's like, how can we create a place that is safe for my children to grow up and have choice? Because my children who have had serious reactions, they deserve to be able to drive a car, go to school, have a job, get married, have children, deliver in a safe place, their babies, to then be, we need to create the system. It's not there. So who better than us? I'm a little country girl from Stanley County, North Carolina. And why not me? Why not you? Right.
Wow. I got goosebumps as you were talking about the power of love. That's been the focus, sort of center of my show. But I've found, because I started this show at the height or at the beginning of the COVID battle, and it was like a war, because there was so much information, I would actually call it, using their terms, disinformation and misinformation coming from the authorities, that it needed to be countered with the actual science, right? As we were sort of teasing about Fauci saying follow the science, but he was probably the biggest perpetrator of lies and lack of science. But in the end, you know, Cami, I feel like information for information, we have the information. People don't seem to be tuning into it. So what do we got to do? We've got to zone in on love and connectedness. And I think we reach hearts and minds and souls. This awakening you're talking about, I feel it coming. I want to transition even this show, have you back, and you can be part of that process to give us an update on how it's going. We need to lead with love and with heart.
So I actually have been on my own spiritual journey where, because I've been a fighter, I've been a warrior my whole life and an activist, and we're going to make the world a better place. And, you know, I'm just, I had this like this angst and this desire, this need to just like save and like get information out there. And thanks to like censorship and being shadow banned on Facebook and things, I was so frustrated. And honestly, I learned over time, all right, Cami, it's time you shift from the fight into the light, because we've already made the ripples. Made the ripples, and we have to trust that other people, as they're waking up, they're picking up that. And so this is why we have to be in that love frequency, because this is time, as we shift in this love frequency, this whole other universe, I talk about these, we're clearly all here on the same planet, but like, if we can move ourselves into this love frequency, the people who choose to stay in that fear frequency, the control frequency, we're going to actually become kind of invisible to them, because they are just simply not going to understand or resonate with what we're saying. And that's okay. I'm not trying to save them. You know, as people wake up and they're like, where's the light? They're in the darkness. I want the light. Mm-hmm. Who's going to be the light? Yeah. Right? Where's the light going to be? And so this is why I think you and I and everyone, we're born at this time in history to be here to help shift the collective consciousness.
Wow. We're going to end on that, folks. We're going to shift from the fight to the light. Thank you, Dr. Cami Benton. You are doing important work, and God bless you. I don't know what to say. You gave me goosebumps. I love it.
Well, thank you for being such a hero to so many. I appreciate you.
Help me spread the truth and share this on social media and with your friends at doctorsandscience.com. I look forward to running with you against the wind. Go to our website, doctorsandscience.com, sign up, donate if you can, and let's make this the weekly show the nation's been waiting for. I'm Dr. Paul.